coming up on 11 minutes before 6 o'clock on the coast. Well, for years, Susan Oakey Baker took on one adventure after another with her husband. She was married to Jim Haberl, a mountain guide from Vancouver, who was the first Canadian to reach the summit of K2. And Susan and Jim skied the Himalayas, they went rafting in Nepal, they climbed mountains across North America. But then Jim died suddenly and unexpectedly, and Susan struggled with her husband's death. And then she came up with an idea. She would revisit many of the places that she and Jim had traveled to. Well, now she's written a book about this experience. It's called Finding Jim, and Susan Oakey Baker joins me in studio. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Stephen?
I'm fine. Thank you for being here. What can you tell us about Jim? Who was he?
Well, Jim grew up in Vancouver, as did I, and he got his international guide certification. He loved being in the mountains, and he loved sharing that with other people, and he was really good at it as well. And as a person, I first met him when I was 16. We were on a sailboat in the Queen Charlotte Islands. And so for me, Jim was a strong person, but he was also gentle, had a big heart, and very non-judgmental. And then we met again 10 years later, and that was when we fell in love and started traveling around and doing all these adventures together. I think for me, Jim was someone who, he taught me an awful lot. He taught me an awful lot about living open-heartedly. And facing the uncertainty of life, and accepting that we are not always strong.
And how did Jim die?
It was on April 29th, 1999, and he and two other guides had gone to Alaska to do a trip there. And it was in a similar region that Jim and I went to the year before. And the snowpack that year was bad. And so they were being careful, but they went up this couloir that had already avalanched. And it was quite steep, but they figured it had already avalanched, so it would be okay. But as they got higher and higher, they realized it was quite precarious. But they made it to the top, and they were almost at the ridge, and the other two guides stopped to rest. And Jim kept going in lead, and he was closer to the ridge, and the angle had really, the slope had really angled off, and an avalanche broke off above him. So fortunately, when the avalanche came down, the velocity was split around this small little nubbin that the other two guides were resting on. And so although it pushed them, it did not push them over the cliff. But Jim was in the main drive of the avalanche, and it pushed him over a 400-meter cliff. So he was killed going down.
I'm so sorry. You eventually went to that location. You decided to visit the site of the avalanche after his death. Why did you want to go there?
You know, it was 2 months after he was killed, and one of the guides who was with him came over, both of them came over actually to show me on the map where they'd been and where he was killed. And I don't know, something just welled up, and I said, I want to go. And one of the fellows said, I'll go with you. So, and then a good friend of mine, another Sue, she came as well. So the three of us went back and visited this place. And part of it, I think, was I think sometimes when we face adversity in life, we go on pilgrimage a little bit. You know, Forrest Gump, he started running to the coast. And for me, it was a little bit, I didn't believe he was dead on some level. Mm-hmm. And so it was a chance for my soul to catch up to the truth, going to these places and gathering the facts. And when we went to Alaska, we actually found his ice axe and a glove at the bottom of the cliff, you know. So there were these tangible facts that were battling with my heart. My heart was saying, well, he can't be dead. My head was saying, well, you know, he is. So that was part of it. And I think, too, just having some momentum. And I went into survival mode when he died. And I think there's a lot of adrenaline running through your body all the time when you're in survival mode. And I think keeping some forward momentum, some movement is helpful. And that was one of the things that was somewhat consoling, to go to places where I could feel him, I guess.
I guess that's what I'm curious about, is I see the impulse to go to Alaska to go get some closure, to witness firsthand where this happened, but then to retrace your steps through some of your other adventures. You must have missed him terribly.
Yeah, I think it was a double-edged sword. I think that, yes, going there again, it gave me this more evidence that he was dead. Well, he wasn't there, but I still got the feeling of being in the mountains, and I still got those memories of being with him. And I think in my process of grief and waiting for my heart to accept it, that was consoling.
And did that eventually happen for you? Did you get to a place emotionally, but maybe physically as well, where you thought, okay, I can accept this now?
You know, I'm the type of person where I really like life to go tickety-boo. You know, I like to package everything up in a neat box. And so this was not going tickety-boo for me. And I wanted grief to go in a linear fashion and go through the steps they talked about in the books. And they say after a year or two, you know, you're on your way. And I thought, this is not happening for me. So I think I came to the conclusion that you don't actually get over grief. I think you just get more and more used to it. And for me, what helped, I just, after a while, I had this resolve that I wanted to keep living. And not only did I want to keep living, but I wanted to love again. And I think that's what pulled me forward. And then I met my present husband, Joe, mm-hmm. and we had our baby, Sam. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at that point, once my present life felt full, I think I was more accepting of the past. I wasn't trying to drag the past into the present anymore.
And the process of going through this all again to write the book?
Well, it's interesting because when interviews have been asking me, well, when did you start writing the book? I realized that I started writing the book when I met Joe, my present husband. And so I've been writing journal entries for 5 years. Two of those years I was writing letters to Jim. So writing, which was very cathartic, mm-hmm. but I'd had this idea I'd write a book, but it wasn't until I met Joe that I think I had the courage. I felt grounded enough in a present life that I could then go back.
And how has Joe been about all of this?
Well, I say to people, you know, it's not easy for the man who falls in love with the widow. You know, he's compared to a man who everyone loved, you know, and who will be eulogized. He'll always be 41 years old. He'll always be fresh faced. And so that's not easy for him. But I think we've come to a point where he accepts that as part of who I am. He accepts all of my heart. And part of my heart includes the pain of having lost Jim. And I think that we've started, he and I, from a place of truth that way, you know, as opposed to just pretending that I never loved anyone else. And so I think to answer your question, he does okay with it. And I try to be sensitive and try to, you know, tune into him as much as I can and reassure him as much as I can.
Susan, it's great to meet you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Susan Oki Baker, the author of Finding Jim. It is published by Rocky Mountain Books. 3 minutes before 6 o'clock on the coast on CBC Radio 1, Susan McNamee here with some CBC local news headlines.